From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, May 11th, 2018. And on this day, an effort in Westbrook to help students learn to have civil conversations about politics. And as Mother's Day approaches, one writer remembers her own mom. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
Some people who live along the St. John River in New Brunswick are just starting to recover from record-breaking spring floods. Some 1,600 people have been displaced, and flooded farms have seen herds of cattle evacuated by boat to higher ground.
It's been a long, hard stretch for a lot of people. They've been out of their homes maybe for as much as almost 2 weeks now.
Jeffrey Downey with the New Brunswick Emergency Measures Organization says waters fell below flood stage for the first time in weeks at Fredericton today. But other communities further downriver, like the city of St. John, will stay at flood stage until sometime on Monday.
Some people still aren't out of the woods yet in terms of the river level, but there's help available.
Several flood support groups have formed on social media. One such Facebook group, residents were also trading photographs of items lost and found in the floodwaters. One man reported that his hot tub had disappeared from his home near Fredericton, but found floating 70 miles away in St. John. The Trans-Canada Highway linking Fredericton and Moncton opened again for the first time in 2 weeks today. Authorities say reopening all affected roads will take some time as they test roads and bridges for safety. The polarization of American politics has made its mark in all corners of our society, including at school. In an effort to teach high school students how to engage in civil discourse and to find common ground on important issues, the organizers of a new project in Southern Maine brought together nearly 30 students with diverse backgrounds and point of view. They first gathered several months ago for a weekend at a camp on Sebago Lake and reconvened last night at a candidates' forum in Westbrook. As Robbie Feinberg reports, some students discovered a new perspective on the art of compromise.
So to compromise on the age differences, I think
29 students are seated in a large semicircle on the stage of the Westbrook Performing Arts Center. Next to them are 9 gubernatorial candidates, all Democrats and independents. Organizers say the lack of Republicans was only due to scheduling conflicts. And their discussion covers a wide range of issues, including drug policy and mental health education in Maine schools.
I feel like we teach mental illnesses, but we don't teach how to find help and how to help others within that. So I think those are some of the things that we kind of want to talk about and address.
The seeds for Thursday's student-candidate dialogue were planted by Lowell Libby, an administrator at Portland's private Waynefleet School. Libby says he had become frustrated by the divisiveness and gridlock that have come to shape modern politics. So about 4 months ago, he decided to work with other schools and interest groups, including the right-leaning Maine Heritage Policy Center, to test an idea.
It's learning to view differences as assets rather than liabilities, something to be tapped rather than something to be feared, something to listen to rather than defeat.
That led to the weekend gathering of 29 students at Camp Sunshine on Sebago Lake. The students represented schools from all over Southern Maine. Some described their views as conservative, some as liberal, some identified as Democrats or Republicans. They were there to listen to each other and see what policies they could agree on.
I'm not going to lie, it was very difficult.
Deering High School sophomore Salam Desta recalls that even with facilitation from adults, it was tough to find common ground.
The first conversation we had on race especially was very, I guess it got really intense and emotional, and a lot of people had very strong opinions on it. And at first, I believe that we were not listening to each other. We were kind of just talking at each other.
Desta says they fought for hours, but at one point they decided to move on and identify policies that they could support around gun reform, education, and drug policy.
Maybe instead of kind of focusing on what we disagree on, focusing on what we agree on, and really taking advantage of that and making the most of it.
And in Westbrook on Thursday night, the group outlined a detailed consensus plan for the candidates on what policies they do support. That includes a proposal for gun control, featuring universal background checks, licensing, and mental health exams. But Westbrook High School senior Daniel Sanborn says they also wanted to know what the gubernatorial hopefuls would do to assure school safety.
What will you do if you're elected for us students going to school? What are you going to do to protect us from such events as, like, a school shooting or other dangerous things like that?
Virtually all of the candidates who answered supported parts of the student positions. Democratic candidate Mark Dion, a former county sheriff, said he opposes excessive school security that he believes could make school buildings feel more like jails. But he supported many of their ideas.
I need you to go home and convince your parents, right? Because as we get older, our thinking gets more rigid and we need to be challenged.
In fact, project organizers hope that these students do find ways to communicate their political beliefs in a more productive way. Westbrook High School junior Sebastian Johns, who describes himself as a conservative activist, admits that he has at times characterized those with differing views as idiots.
Like, we didn't like each other without even having a discussion, just based off political views. And after coming here and talking to more friends and talking to other people, I think it's a lot more important now to not be so polar about it and to actually learn where people are coming from before just immediately calling them an idiot for being a Democrat.
But the students acknowledge that any transformation that might be taking place in the school lunchroom will be harder to realize in the highly polarized American culture. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
Education reporting on Maine Public Radio is supported by a grant from the Nellie Mae Education Foundation. As we make plans to celebrate Mother's Day this weekend, some of us will also think back about the moms we've lost. Writer Sarah Ann Donnelly gets a final lesson from her mother from long-lost friends who showed up at her mother's memorial service.
Hi.
Entrez-vous. You must be Sarah.
I am.
We're just
Hi,
talking
Sarah.
About you. Come
Who's
on in, my
hey.
Dear.
What's
my name is Mimi.
Okay.
And you know Gina, of course.
Hey, Sarah.
Hi,
How
Gina.
Are you, hon?
Good.
Welcome. Everybody's coming.
Oh,
my mom's service was 2 years ago, and I'm finally taking these strangers up on their offer to reminisce. We meet at Gina Norton's condo in South Portland, eight women who call themselves the girls. They grew up together in 1950s Portland from First Communion on. One by one, they lean in and hug me tight. They smell sweet and floral, like Mom did. Mimi Brooks Clark has brought a photo of Mom from her middle school days.
Your mother would have been in the front here because she was a little thing.
There she is. See that little pout?
Yeah.
See that pout?
Before we've even dented the lemon pound cake, an argument breaks out about which church Mom attended.
So your mother was a St. Dominic's girl.
She was St. Louis. The girls had stayed in touch over the years, through marriages and kids and a divorce here and there. But they say my mother, Patricia Marocca, seemed to have disappeared into thin air.
But we always thought, whatever happened to Pat? Mm. And everybody would get together and say, you ever hear from Pat?
They tried for years to find her, sending letters to her brothers in Cape Elizabeth, checking the Portland High School alumni notes, even scouring the obituaries, which was eventually where they found her. I explained that Mom had been ill for more than 25 years and had lived the last 15 in assisted living facilities and nursing homes around Portland. Trying to keep my composure, I focus on a point on the white carpet and whip through the worst of it. Depression, drinking, kidney failure and dialysis, a leg amputation, a stroke, garbled speech and no longer being able to read or write. The girls shake their heads. A couple of them begin to cry.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's odd
my
that
God.
We didn't have some way of
It just it. Makes me sad.
I confess to them that I ignored requests from the high school for updates on Mom.
And I just never answered it because I didn't think that my mom would want me to answer about what
sure.
was going on.
Right.
But
right.
when you showed up to the funeral, I thought, "Oh, you know, that what
funerals you're very
what,
important at this age."
Well, what but when you showed up and you said I would have you know, hung out with her. Yes, gone to visit her.
I can tell you 150%. If one of us in this room knew that she was either at St. Joe's, wherever it was, we would have been there without a doubt. Everyone would have been there without exception. And that's the thing that makes me sad. It wouldn't have made any difference to any of us to sit there and feed her ice cream for 4 hours.
Well, you keep saying that she's fierce, or she was fierce, and she was fierce until the end. She would not have let you feed her ice cream. She could manage that plenty.
But I don't tell them everything. That Mom might actually not have wanted to see them again, because life had changed her. I can still remember her staring for hours, blank-faced, in the living room during her divorce from my father, who in the final act had had an affair. It was as if Mom was molting from one version of herself into another. The person that emerged, as she put it, wouldn't trust another woman as far as she could throw her. The Mom I knew growing up rarely made friends. She pushed women away if they somehow managed to get close. The Mom I knew kept to herself way before illness did it for her. And the thing I realized that afternoon, I do that too. After 2 hours, I thank the girls and head back to my car. I sink exhausted into the driver's seat, feeling desperately lonely for Mom and for me. I am molting. I pick up my cell and call Caitlin Scholl, an artist with a daughter only 3 days younger than mine. She's been in my acquaintance zone for a while, where most women I know hang out in perpetuity. Maybe, I think, it wouldn't be so bad to let her see me like this. After a couple of rings, Caitlin picks up. "It's giving me chills," she says, "that these women just appeared at your mother's funeral. It's like your mom's trying to send you a message from beyond the grave." And then she asks, "What do you think is the message?"
And writer Sarah Ann Donnelly, who lives in Portland, is working on a book about her mother. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, May 11th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.